Happy New Year! Will this year have entertainment for all that in a bag of chips? Plus, a festival that exists to promote edgy independent projects pulls a game for being too edgy. All that, your live calls and chat comments on the Bobby Blackwolf Show week of January 7th, 2007.
Bobby Blackwolf Show, you're on the air.
Calling in to chime in about this, Matt.
And it's your fault, Doc Wolf. It's you guys who buy these dumb Katamari, Catalarm kind of that game.
Bobby Blackwolf back at Dragon Con 2005. I am here at Anime Weekend Atlanta 11. I'm here at the Best Buy in Alpharetta, Georgia, talking about the Xbox 360 launch.
DC Nate and everybody in chat's all going, we didn't buy into the hype. You did buy into the hype, you just didn't buy the system.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, it's Bobby Blackwolf.
I'm so not used to talking. It's been a long time. Hello, everybody, and Happy New Year. Hopefully you didn't blow yourself up. Welcome back to the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. If you're listening to us live here on All Games Radio, head on over to our chat room, chat.allgames.com, or just click on chat on our homepage. That will take you in there. I will be reading comments from chat throughout tonight's show. We do have two ways that people can call in and talk to us. We're going to be opening these up a little bit later on in the show. You can call in via our toll-free number, which is toll-free in the United States and Canada, 1-866-880-0156. Or you can call us on Skype. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwolf Show, all one word, and we will be opening up those up probably right around the half point of the show. If you are listening to us on the podcast, you can email me at blackwolf@allgames.com or leave a voicemail on that Skype line. You'll probably hear your email read on the show. We actually do have a couple emails to read today. And as always, I do want to thank Kropotkin and Hendrix for providing this week's weekly audio game review. This time it was Star Trek Legacy. It's one guy in the UK and one guy in the US giving us their honest opinion and a few jokes about a different game each week. We premiere it just before this show goes live, or you can download it as a podcast feed on our website, allgames.com. That link and many others discussed tonight will be on our website, bobbyblackwolfshow.com. And I want to talk a little bit about Star Trek Legacy, because I game-flied this, because I am a Trek fan. I do like my Trek. I grew up on Trek. I did not like Star Wars all that much, which is probably blasphemy in some circles. But, you know, I considered myself a Trekker, which, by the way, is the non-insulting term form of Trekkie. And this game, Star Trek Legacy, blew. I think that it didn't just blow. It also mimicked a vacuum. It sucked pretty hard. The only really good part about it was in the beginning, when you boot up the game, you know how like they have like the developer and the publisher like put in their little, hi, this is who we are, you know, like Bethesda had their thing up. Then Mad Dog, they had their little video and a great little riff off of the most famous word in the movie Star Trek II, the Wrath of Khan, for the hint there. And then the main menu came up, and that was when all the good stopped, was when that main menu came up. The multiplayer, nobody's playing multiplayer at all. And I found out why. It's because I tried to play with Kropotkin and Hendrix right after they recorded the review. And we couldn't, to say the least. We got in there, and there were only three of us in the lobby. And we selected our ships, and then the game was, tell the host that you're ready. And the way that you have to tell the host you're ready is you're supposed to, according to the user interface, hit the start button, which is labeled engage. Well, that kind of didn't work. You could hit start all you wanted, and it wouldn't tell the host you're ready. So you could highlight that same button and hit A. And maybe the 15th time that you hit A to say engage, it finally went through. And then the host would start the game. The host would go to the loading screen, and it would make the other two people not ready. And so we were sitting in the lobby. They were at the loading screen, and then eventually the host dropped the session. We did get two game sessions in, and they give you an achievement for sucking, because I guess, you know, they wanted an achievement for making a sucky game. So they give you an achievement for sucking, but, and this is not really unheard of, you know, Dead or Alive 4 has the achievement of, you lost 5 in a row, you lost 10 in a row, but it gives you 0 points. You actually get achievement points. You get points on your gamer card if you suck. You get 5 gamer points, which is not a lot, but you get 5 gamer points if you are the first one dead in a multiplayer game of at least 3 players. Awesome. So luckily, in the second game, I purposely killed myself so I could have those 5 points, because I need all the help I can on my gamer score. One of the other things that's really neat about the game, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, well, I want to see the story that's behind the game. Well, Mad Dog Software did the work for you. They have the extras section, and there are these cutscenes throughout the game that talks about, you know, the Vulcan scientist that is trying to take over the universe with the help of the Borg. Well, you can put in the game and go to the extra section and watch all of the cutscenes. They are unlocked from the beginning. You do not have to play through the game to see the full story. You can watch the ending before you even go into any type of space battle. Good job. So now I don't need to play the game. I played a couple of missions. It is kind of it's kind of difficult to control. The targeting system, the camera following system doesn't work too well, especially in multiplayer. And it's really confusing to try to do all those, the control all your ships and the fleet and stuff. And the thing is, I hear that the 360 version is more polished than the PC version. I am scared of the PC version right now. So don't bother with Star Trek Legacy. Even if you're a Trek fan, don't bother. Or just rent it and watch the cutscenes, since they're already unlocked and you can see the ending and all that stuff. So New Year's was interesting, because I actually finally got to play some games that I haven't been able to get around to getting yet. One of which is for the Wii, Rayman's Raving Rabbids. This is a great 4-player game on the Wii. And, you know, a lot of people didn't think it would. I don't know if it really works well in a lot of the instances. Like, there is a Area 51 style shooting game where you can walk through and, you know, shoot things. It rocks for you, and then you have, like, this plunger and stuff like that. But some of those mini games, they are fun with 4 people if you have 4 remotes and 4 nunchucks. We had played it at my place because I had the Chick-fil-A Bowl. The Peach Bowl party, which, thankfully, Georgia kicked ass in the end. But it was pretty scary, and we kind of didn't watch the third quarter because we didn't want to see the butt-whooping. And he brought a friend of mine who has, like, 4 remotes and 4 nunchucks. He brought his stuff, but I already had 2, and we were going to use my Wii because it's already plugged in via component cables and all set up for my TV. Getting that temporary pairing of the remotes is one of the most difficult things I think I have ever attempted in my life. What you have to do is you hit the home button on one of the remotes that's in the that's synced to your Wii, and you hit reconnect. And then what it does, the screen pops up, and it says, and it turns off all the remotes, and it says, okay, hold down the 1 and 2 button in the order that you want the remotes. And it works fine for the first 3 remotes. The 4th one, it just sits there and does nothing, and sometimes it'll go ahead and just exit out of the reconnect menu, so you've got 3 remotes synced. And you have to do this every time. Like, you can't do this like the main Wii menu and then put in a game and launch the game. You have to redo this if you launch the game and all that stuff. So it's really, really just unnecessarily difficult to sync other people's remotes to your Wii in a temporary basis without destroying their already existing connection. So I think Nintendo should do something about that. That should be probably just a software update. So get on that. And also at the New Year's party, everybody was playing Guitar Hero 2, which is still it amazed me last year at New Year's that people were playing Guitar Hero, because I've been playing rhythm action games for a while. You know, usually they come out of Japan. I'm a big 2DX fan. I like poppin' music, and I didn't expect Guitar Hero, a rhythm action game, to be played that much last year, and it got played a lot this year. You know, luckily I didn't have to bring any of my stuff because everybody else brought their guitars. We had like 5 copies of Guitar Hero there and like 4 guitars or something like that, one of which was wireless. So I didn't have to bring any of my stuff. We also played Bomberman 93 on the virtual console, 4 players. So that was New Year's. So that, and then we also got drunk, which is the best part, and we blowed stuff up. We blew up part of the world. DMN says, don't look at me, I didn't test it, in regards to the Nintendo resyncing. So pass that on to your superiors, Mr. DMN, that I want resyncing to work better. And I finally did actually get to play with the SD card, because I finally was able to get an SD card. Fry's Electronics here had a really good deal for a 2-gigabyte SD card for $30. So I went over there to go pick up that SD card, so I could finally like play my own tracks in Excite Truck, which is pretty much the only real benefit to having an SD card. And I noticed something really weird, which I put on my Flickr page, and I'm going to link it in chat again, and I'll put it in the show notes, but at Fry's, not a Wii in sight, there were no controllers or anything, but there is a whole bunch of PlayStation 3s, 60 gigabytes, not display boxes, but they were just stacked up in the middle of the big aisle thingy. No bundle, just the straight PS3s. Apparently, people just couldn't flip them on eBay, and so they started returning them. And so now there's a plethora of PS3s, at least that I have seen, and a lot of other people are saying that, you know, there's PS3s everywhere, and some people are saying, oh, you're just a Sony basher and all that stuff. No, I took a picture with my cell phone camera and threw it up. If you want a PS3, I'm not going to buy it for you, Fifth Dream, but you can probably go in and find them in most stores right now. The supply is much greater than the demand for right now, until Sony comes out with a good game for it. So I feel bad for the people who eBayed them, or thought that they were going to eBay them for massive profit and got massive damage instead. Sucks to be y'all. And Pen15 points out that the 360s are everywhere, and wait, it's been a year. But 360s were not available at this time last year. 360s still were very hard to get until about March or April, I think. And last year I got in trouble with Sub-Z by saying, yeah, the 360, you're going to be able to find one no problem the week before Christmas. And I was wrong. And so I didn't say the same here, and it's not the week before Christmas, but it's the week, 2 weeks after Christmas. And you can find a PS3 now if you look in the right places, and, you know, there's a bunch in places. So, I mean, what is on PS3 right now? Well, Gran Turismo HD Concept did come out on Christmas Eve, and I hinted to it a little bit last week during our 2.5-hour end-of-year extravaganza. And if I compare it to, like, Project Gotham 3, I think Project Gotham 3 looks better. Now, granted, you know, the only thing we got in Gran Turismo HD is, like, this mountain course and stuff. But there's none of the crowd moving around like was in the concept video that they made. I didn't think the car models looked that much better than, say, a Project Gotham 3. So I'm pretty glad it's a free game. And I've unlocked all the cars and stuff, and I've kind of gotten used to it a little bit. There's not that many people playing on it, though, because they've already reset the leaderboard once. I haven't checked this week to see if they reset it again. But, you know, when I was in the top 100 of times on some of these tracks, that means not many people are playing, because I'm not that great at drifting and all that fun stuff. Another game that came out, Grip Shift, which is a game that I played on the PSP. I rented it and didn't tickle my fancy, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word to say, but I mean, I wasn't a big fan of it on the PSP, but I tried the demo on the PS3. It's a downloadable game, $9.99, and still not that much into it. The demo version basically takes you through the tutorial and then one race, and then that's it. Then you got to pay $10 for the rest of it. You know, smooth frame rates, looks nice, but it's not anything realistic. You know, I think the Wii could actually pull off the graphics that they put in Grip Shift, but that's just me. So, couple plugs before I go into some of the news for this week. I promise that I'm going to talk a little bit more about XNA a little bit later. This past week, I've actually been working on some enhancements to allgames.com, our website, and I've actually got a blog feature up, which right now all we have is a companion blog to All Games Interactive. But if you go to allgames.com, there's a new blogs selection at the top. And one of the blogs that I've actually already got set up, but I haven't put anything in there, is my XNA blog, where I'm going to put some stuff about XNA. I'm going to put screenshots and possibly downloads of what I'm doing, but I haven't been able to do it much now. But I did talk about it on one of our affiliates, XBL Radio. version 34.5. That's their way of saying episode. But that's their live-on-live feature, and we all sat in a Gears of War lobby. Me and a couple guys that are actually a lot more into it than even I am. They've been doing some other stuff and with it. We all talked about what XNA is and what we hope to see in the future in XNA. There were some Microsoft MVP members in there. So you might want to check that out. XBL Radio, it's going to come out Tuesday. So it's not out right now. We're going to be airing it Tuesday night here on All Games Radio. But it's going to go out on their podcast feed on Tuesday. And also, I forgot to mention this last week, and they're going to kill me. But I was on Orange Lounge Radio's end of year spectacular as well, saying why I thought Oblivion was Game of the Year and about all these changes with E3 and what's going on with E3. So you want probably can check both those out. They're both All Games affiliates, so you can find them at allgames.com or on their respective sites. The first big story that I wanted to cover that happened this week, Next Generation has reported that the media group IDG, which owns GamePro Magazine and Macworld, has officially named its major Los Angeles Convention Center-based consumer gaming event the Entertainment for All Expo, or E for All. The event is headed up by former E3 organizer Mary Dulleher, who now works for IDG World Expo as the executive vice president. She says that the event will be beneficial to both consumers and participating game companies. She said, quote, "For companies that produce and develop games, interactive toys, and all things related, our goal is that E4All will foster promotional and relationship-building opportunities that only face-to-face contact can create. As a consumer-focused expo, E4All will be open to the public at a fee for $100 per ticket for the full three-day access to the various events held at the expo. IDG World Expo organizes a variety of conferences and events, including Macworld Conference and Expo and Linux World Conference and Expo. This used to be called the GamePro Expo, and they held this public contest to name the show. And there were 3,000 suggestions that were taken at GamePro.com, and the winning suggestion was by Dante Padre of California. It says that the title reflects the open-to-all nature of the event. Some of the losing names were Verge and Verge X, but E4All was the unanimous winner. So when's this going to be? E4All is going to be held at the Los Angeles Convention Center on October 18th through 20th, just as the holiday gift buying season ramps up. Attendees will be able to buy exhibitors' products from the show floor. Now, they won't announce which companies are participating, but other highlights at the event will include hands-on opportunities to try the latest games and gadgets, video game tournaments, a job fair, and family-friendly offerings. Also, as announced actually on All Games Interactive on during their holiday special last year, ooh, Video Games Live, which is Tommy Tallarico's live performance of video games music, will be a part of E4All. Other events held during the expo will be announced in the future. And E4All is endorsed by the Entertainment Software Association, which put on E3 in the past. Now, Seymour Booty asks, do you know if that price includes seats to the Video Games Live Concert 2? I doubt it, because those tickets are usually separate from the conferences that they are a part of. Like, if you got a ticket to Wizard World, you didn't automatically get a seat for Video Games Live. So, no. And, I mean, even at GDC, it wasn't included in our GDC price, even though it was a part of GDC, going to see Video Games Live. Now, if people are like me and read Slashdot Games, the Slashdot's games blog section, this is not E3. The E3 Business and Media Expo is still occurring in July and is still boring to you gamers. It is still an industry event. This is that GamePro Expo. See, Slashdot posted a story saying E3 renamed E4All, which is not true. This is not E3. In name or in theory. And that's why I think that a lot of gamers that are going to come to this are going to be very disappointed, because the gamers are going to expect E3. They're going to expect the extravagant booths with the booth babes, and you know they're going to pay $100 to go in, and they want to see the latest, the upcoming stuff. That, you know, most gamers probably don't care too much about the latest and greatest right now. They want to see new stuff. Like, would you pay $100 to go somewhere this weekend to see Gears of War, the Wii's launch lineup, Resistance, Fall of Man. Would you pay $100 to go see that stuff right now? I don't think you would. I wouldn't. But that's kind of what they're talking about that this is going to be, is that this is going to be companies showing off games that you can purchase, which means that they're already out. And there will be video game tournaments and stuff like that. $100 is a very steep price for something like that, especially if it's supposed to be for the entire family. If you have a family of four, mom, dad, and two kids, that's $400 just to go into something that's really a glorified EB with demonstrations by the game companies. So I'd like to see what more E for All is going to bring to the table, but I think that if you're thinking that this is going to be E3, just because it's endorsed by the ESA and in the same place that E3 was, you're going to be disappointed, because I don't think that this is going to be something for you. I mean, it's going to be more kind of like, it's going to be a big version of maybe the Penny Arcade Expo. And the Penny Arcade Expo was not $100 per person, you know, or even America's Video Game Expo. You know, that wasn't $100 per person either. And so, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I want to see a little bit more about it, but it's not really doing it for me. I'm going to see in chat if it's doing it for anybody else here. Shadows Laya says that he'd pay to see any PS3 content, but that's probably because it's not in Europe right now. Ben15 says, maybe instead of booth babes, there are booth strippers, not at the family-friendly show. So E4All is going to happen. I don't think it's going to be anything, you know, that's going to be, you know, the big companies probably aren't even going to participate in as much of a fashion. So people are going to go thinking it's E3 reincarnate with the general public in, and they're going to be disappointed. And as I said before, you know, now that I've kind of seen what's going on and have had some time to reflect on this about E3 itself, the actual show that is E3, and it's now the E3 Business and Media Expo or whatever it's called. They did what they had to do to make the show survive. And what they had to do was make the show unattractive for gamers. Because that was the problem with E3. Everybody that was a gamer wanted to go to E3. That was E3's problem. That was their downfall. So what they did is now they have made it boring, and now people don't want to go to E3 that are gamers. Now, only the people in the industry that are have business to be done at E3, they're the only ones that want to go to E3 now, which I think is great. That's exactly what the industry needs. It's E3 is supposed to be a trade event for the industry, and they finally took some steps to get that, because the industry is mature, and I guess they didn't need a really big party anymore. And, you know, now, like, the E4All Expo is, you know, thinking it's going to be picking up the slack, and then you still have like America's Video Game Expo, Penny Arcade Expo, and some of these other, you know, consumer based expos. Hopefully more of those will crop up and, you know, travel the country even, you know, so everybody can get a chance to check out the latest and greatest. Pen15 says Black Wolf won't get to go, so I don't know why he's so happy, because, you know, you're right, I'm not IGN, is what he says, because you know, this is not a big, I'm not with a big media company or anything. And I'd rather see the industry survive, and, you know, if that means I stay home in July and, you know, read about it on IGN, then, you know, hey, that's good for the industry, you know? I mean, if I have business to be done there, I'm sure I could get in. I'm not worried about that. True says that we should all show up anyway just to piss them off, and, you have fun with that. So, a conference that's actually happening this coming week is a Consumer Electronics Show, and CES is basically TVs and cell phones. There you go. That's CES in a nutshell. Well, we may actually get some announcements from Microsoft called "Let's Give Our Early Adopters the Shaft." I think that will be the title of their keynote speech. Engadget has landed pictures of what appears to be the second Xbox 360, the version 2, if you will, codenamed Zephyr. The original one was Xenon. Now, the long-rumored about and awaited update to the console won't just feature a new, cooler 65-nanometer processor that we've already reported on here in the past. It also finally added an HDMI port for full digital 1080p pleasure, as well as a 120-gigabyte hard drive. Now, the hard drive may or may not come bundled with the kit. We don't know. We don't know yet if the Zephyr 360 is going to what is going to run price wise. They said that Engadget said that their Xbox Insider seemed happy to let them know that this is coming soon. So now that I might have to do my fourth repair of my Xbox 360, I wonder if I should repair it or if I should just wait for one of these Super Zephyrs. My 360 makes a buzzsaw noise, kind of, whenever the disk is slowing down. Like, let's say you turn the 360 on, there's a disk in the drive, and it goes to the dashboard. As it slows down, I hear this, and then we look, and, like, actually, there is now a scratch on Oblivion. And I think Gears of War got a little tiny scratch, too. So I'm trying to decide if I want to still, because I think I'm still under the warranty from the last Xbox 360 that I got back. So yeah, I may be without my 360 again for about 2 weeks, which is going to suck. Seymour Booty says there's 1 hour left until Bill Gates' CES keynote. So this show won't be on. So I'm going to wait until next week to say any more about the 360 here. You probably, if you're listening to the podcast, you already know what was said. We don't, and so I'm not going to try to talk about it. We're going to take a quick music break. You won't be able to hear this on the podcast because we're cheap. It's basically to rest my voice and stuff like that. You're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show on All Games Radio, online at allgames.com.
Hello, this is DMN from Seattle, Washington. You're listening to the only man who cannot win a single game of Tetris, Bobby Blackwell. Here's Bobby.
DMN can go die in a fire. If you want to leave a bumper like that, welcome back to the Bobby Blackwell Show, by the way. If you want to leave a bumper like that that doesn't make fun of my Tetris prowess, call our Skype line, Bobby Blackwell Show. Leave a voicemail sometime during the week with your name and something nice about the show and saying that we can come, welcome back to the Bobby Blackwell Show and all that stuff. Or you can email that as an MP3. So I got one more thing that I really wanted to talk about, and then I'll open up the phone lines and read some emails, but this is kind of a big thing, and it's something, this is a topic I don't talk that much about because it's kind of a volatile topic, and you know, I risk offending people, but this is about what's going on with the Super Columbine Massacre RPG game. It's kind of hard to call it a game because game has this connotation of being, you know, entertainment, enjoyment, and stuff like that. What this is it was written by a guy by the name of Donnie LaDon several years ago using RPG Maker 2000, I think. RPG Maker 2000 for the PC. It's not that great of a game. You know, the graphics are very 16-bit. I mean, RPG Maker basically allows you to create 16-bit style RPGs. And he did this to kind of delve into the mind of what happened at Columbine from the killer's perspective. Much like movies like Elephant did. You know, and Elephant won like all these independent film awards and all that stuff. So he kind of did the same thing. And he kind of stayed away from the spotlight for years. Like, I mean, this game was made literally like 3 years ago or something like that. People only started finding it like this year. Last year, since it's 2007 now. And he didn't want people to, you know, he didn't put his name out there. He didn't do anything. The game was completely free, so he was not trying to profit from the tragedy. There was no money exchanging hands. It was a free download from his site. And everybody started, you know, going after the game, and it started getting more and more press. And so he was invited, and they basically courted with this film festival that also has a gaming component called Slam Dance. Now, Slam Dance was created, the Slam Dance Film Festival was created in a response to the Sundance Film Festival. And basically, a lot of people felt that they couldn't get their films into Sundance because their films were too edgy. And this was because, like, the Sundance Film Festival grew so much, and so they got acceptance of donations from large sponsors, and that kind of, you know, influenced their decisions. And essentially, this is kind of a weird story, so I'm going to go ahead and start from the beginning here, is that Kotaku originally broke this story. Now, Super Columbine Massacre RPG was a finalist in the Slam Dance game competition or whatever. It was officially kicked from the festival due to the mounting pressure from protesters and the loss of sponsorship. This is the first time in the Slam Dance Festival's 13-year history that a game or film has been removed from the festival due to criticism for or outside pressure. In a last-minute call this past Thursday evening, Slamdance president and co-founder Peter Baxter told game developer Donnie Ladon that he regards his decision to remove the game from the festival as deeply flawed, but necessary to the festival's survival. He went on to say, according to Ladon, that the festival's initial decision to select the game was consistent with Slamdance's philosophy, but somewhat naive, and apologized profusely for pulling the entry. Ladon said that he does not bear any ill will towards the festival, but the decision to pull the game does raise concerns, and he says, about freedom of speech in video game development. But I kind of take a little bit of issue with that. He says, quote, I don't want to paint them as the villain in this. I don't think the real issue is a couple of guys at Slamdance who decided to reject my game. It's the larger pressures placed on them, unquote. And the game actually was courted by the festival coordinators initially, because Ladon didn't want to enter the game. But in late November, the festival announced that Ladon's game was one of 14 titles selected as a finalist. So later on, the Rocky Mountain News, which is also the column, was also written by Brian Crescente, who's the lead editor at Kotaku, uncovered that the game was removed from the Slamdance Guerrilla Game Maker competition after the festival's founder made a personal decision based on moral grounds and concerns for the future of the organization. And he said, quote, on one hand, a jury selected this game, and as a result of that decision, it leads to our organization supporting their creative decision. On the other hand, there are moral obligations to consider here with this particular game, in addition to the impact it could have had on the Slamdance organization and its community. Ultimately, it was my decision to pull this game, and I hope that a choice like this will never have to be made again, unquote. So, and then GamePolitics.com also got word that because of this, another finalist actually pulled out. Jonathan Blow is the creator of Braid, and he pulled his game out of the Slamdance competition, and it's it's in protest against the removal of Super Columbine, but he's not a fan of it, and this is what he said about it. He said, quote, it lacks compassion, and I find the artist's statements disingenuous. But despite this, the game does have redeeming value. It does provoke important thoughts, and it does push the boundaries of what games are about. It is composed with more of an eye towards than most games. Clearly, it belongs in the festival, so in protest of the game's expulsion, I have dropped Braid out of the competition as well. Games should be taken seriously as an art form that can expand the boundaries of human experience. As an art form, they contain a tremendous power to shift perspective and to heighten wisdom, but if games are denied that appropriate level of societal recognition, growth of the form will be very difficult, and human culture will be the lesser for it, unquote. Essentially, and I was kind of jumping through because there was a lot of stuff here that I didn't want to actually cover. I don't like the game personally in terms of, the gameplay and, stuff like that. I mean, but I think it is an important, and I hate the word game here, but I'm going to keep saying it. But I think it's very important because, we can have films that talk about the same subject, but I guess, for some reason, the minute you make it a game, which has the connotation of being, for kids, for fun, for entertainment, then it's suddenly a problem. And so I don't like the idea that, things like this are getting censored, not by the government, because the government's not censoring anything here. It's more the, corporations that are sponsoring this. They don't want to be associated with a game that covers the exact same material that a film that won awards several years ago covered. Now, Gerard Joe says that free speech is one thing, but exploiting it to make something as despicable as what he made is a whole other thing. And my question is, have you played the game? It wasn't meant to be exploitable. It was more, what happened, what made them snap. And it was kind of a, thing that you went in and you tried to see what made them snap. Hopefully if you understood the situation, you could prevent it in the future. I'm going to probably pronounce this wrong. B. Wallach, M-E, I don't know if that's like a state name or whatever. And he says, what about the Jack Thompson challenge, that okay, I'm okay game? And it was even more bloody and gory than this, and everybody applauded it. And it was all bloody and gory, and it was about video game violence and all that stuff. And Super Columbine's not really all that gory and stuff. It's more, it's trying to figure out what, trying to depict what went into it. It's okay for a television documentary to be made about it. It's okay for 2020 specials to be made about it. But the minute somebody uses RPG Maker 2000, then it becomes a problem. The only reason I bring it up is really because, I want to see game, you know, this medium elevate to being more than just pulp entertainment. Movies had to do the same thing. And, you know, right now we're still in the entertainment-only area. And there is a whole, you know, slew of serious games coming out there, like the Darfur is Dying game that MTV had a competition for that I talked about a couple months ago. So, I mean, I want to see games kind of get elevated, but if we keep getting knocked down every time somebody finds something that they don't like, you know, then we got a problem. Gerard Joe says, well, I didn't know its context, but you got to admit the name is a little misleading. And from what I understand, he made that name to express, you know, the outrage or whatever, you know. And, I mean, I'm not really defending that. I'm not defending his design decisions, but, you know, I don't think it's right that, you know, people are trying to silence his game, not the government. Government's not doing crap. I'm not, you know, going to sit here and say it's a constitutional issue because it's not. But, you know, people are trying to silence and, you know, are saying, oh, he's just out for money when he didn't want to make any money. He didn't even want to be known for this. Okay. So, I did get some emails, and I'm going to run through them real quick, and then I'm going to open up the phone lines for the last little bit of the show. This first email came to me via my Wii, and this is from True. He probably spent about 2 hours typing this. He said, hey there, Bobby B. Just want to be the first, hopefully, to send a message to the show via the Wii. Hopefully this could be another way in which us listeners can interact with the show. Maybe send messages in by Wii and have them read live when you see the blue light. Just a suggestion. Have a great first of the year show. True from the allgames.com forums. It'd be a good idea, except for the logistic part of it. My Wii is actually in the other room. I do this show from my spare bedroom, or the spare bedroom in my apartment, which we call our office. And I actually do now have game consoles in here. I have my old PS2 and my GameCube hooked up to the TV that's in here. But my Wii is lodged in my main entertainment center over in the other room, so it's not really worth it to bring it in here to see if I get the blue light. Also, that blue light only shows up, like, it only checks, like, once every hour or so. It's not immediate when you get that blue light. So I don't think it would be practical to do that. But people can send me messages via the Wii, and I'll read them on the air. Just I'm not going to be checking it during the show, unfortunately, because of just logistical problems and the way that the Wi-Fi connection works. But I do have a lot of people on my friends list, and I actually decided to look. And I do have 47 friends on my Wii, which has a, I think 100 is the max on there. I have 5 on my PS3. I only know 5 people with a PS3. And some people have been sending me friend requests on the Xbox 360, and I wanted to go ahead and repeat that I'm almost at 100 on my 360. I actually removed some people that like don't have 360s yet. And I'm almost at 100, but I'm not the only Black Wolf on the internet, so if you want to add me, my gamer tag on both the PS3 and the 360 is Black Wolf. Just one word, Black Wolf, boom. Apparently there's this guy in Halo 2 who's like really good, and his name is also like Black Wolf, but the gamer tag is spelled a little bit differently, so people will try to add him, and they get me instead. And so basically, I reject any friends requests that don't come with a message saying, hey, I listened to the show. So you don't have to, like, say, oh, I want to be on your friends list because that's dumb. Just say that you're listening to the show so I know you actually want me and not the Halo 2 guy. And I'll add you, and you can see me not play much of anything online until something good comes out. Also, I thought this was interesting. I have 59 Mii's in the Mii Plaza. These are Mii's that I only have 2 of those are mine, me and my girlfriend. We didn't create any other Mii's because everybody else sends me either their Mii's or celebrity Mii's, but I have 211 Mii's in the Mii Parade, and what this means is that there are times that the Mii channel takes about a minute to load because it's trying to go out to the Wi-Fi connection and get all the new Mii's. That's a lot of Mii's. And I don't like the way that the Mii channel or the Mii Parade works because it's hard to try to find somebody in there, and you have to, you know, you basically click and you try to look at the person on there, and then they go down and you can't stop them from moving. You can make them go okay speed or run, you know, walk or run, but not stop. And then when they come back on the screen, they're all in different places. So it's kind of hard to see anything with 211 Mii's in the Mii Parade. Also, I want to go ahead and pimp that the end of the world occurred about in August, and I have a MySpace, and I don't talk about it all that much on the show because MySpace is where the internet goes to die. So come die with us if you have a MySpace. MySpace.com/Bobby Black Wolf Show. Send us a friend request. next email I've got here is from Stickaxe. It says, hello, good sir. It's Stickaxe, the one who called in about the eBay capitalists a while ago. I want to apologize for making a fool out of myself on the air back then and for taking so much of your time. Don't worry about it. I think you did fine. First time he ever called into the radio show, and it will be his last for a while, which is a shame to hear. Anyway, I was just listening to the Year in Review show, and I thought felt I ought to give you my feedback on it. It was awful. It was senseless ranting and pointless jokes. Kropotkin should be hit with a stick, and Hendrix should be hit with a whip, like the bad boys they are for coming onto the show. I hated it. And then he says, scroll down, and he puts in lies! He says, seriously, though, it was amazing. Many other Year in Review show are actually based around what the best game is in insert category here. Most of the shows are more biased towards what happened recently is in the later half of the year because it's fresh in their minds. The only early months are usually forgotten. There was one show he was listening to where it ran down the best RPGs of the year, had Final Fantasy XII, Elder Scrolls IV, but Kingdom Hearts 2 was never mentioned. While games like Neverwinter Nights 2 were, probably because of the time frame, Kingdom Hearts 2 came out a while ago. It came out same week as Oblivion, actually. The idea of a month-by-month review was genius, and it took a whole year in perspective. Kropotkin and Hendrix brought a lot of humor to the show, and you three kept me laughing until I cried. And he references the candy. Not only was it funny, you brought humor along with great serious points and balanced them together in perfect harmony. I also enjoyed that you had different perspective from a normal gamer, a programmer, and a European gamer. The awesomeness of the show is quite hard to be beaten, and I don't think any other podcast that I'm subscribed to, there are about 7 or 8 of them, has done it. Best show ever. Thanks for putting it together. You should consider getting Kropotkin and Hendrix on the show again sometime, and we will. The problem is, it's when we do this show, Kropotkin's in bed because he can't stay up all night like Shadow's Liar. Anyway, I was just curious, have you ever experienced a time in a game that was so ridiculously hard for your skills that you have declared the part unbeatable, including side quests? Thanks for having the show exist. I look forward to it every week, and thank Kropotkin and Hendrix for him. Okay. So, most games, actually, I declare unbeatable. The first one is that comes to mind is one that I'm going to say because Pen15's in chat. Ninja Gaiden on the Xbox. My rule of thumb is that if I cannot beat a demo, if I cannot complete the demo and win a demo, I do not buy the game. And so I played that Ninja Gaiden demo for the original Xbox, and it was very pretty looking. I thought it looked really nice. Then I got to Mr. Mullet with nunchucks, and he kicked my ass about 10 times. And I said, okay, the game's unbeatable for me. Unfortunately, I'm not really good with my reflexes anymore as I used to be. So, you know, a lot of times, yeah, if there's like a lot of reflex-intensive parts of a game, then I declare it unbeatable. Or if there's just something that's just so ridiculously insane and would take too long to do, like, oh, Final Fantasy VII chocobo breeding? I never beat Final Fantasy VII because I wanted to have that Knights of the Round materia that you needed the gold or the black chocobo, and which meant that you had to raise these chocobos to make this color. And, you know, it was a lot of save your game, breed the chocobo, reset it if it wasn't the right chocobo, and I just got tired of it. And so I never beat the game. I did see the ending, though. And then more recently, Star Trek Legacy, for just being Star Trek Legacy. I declared it unbeatable for that reason. And Pen15 says, Bobby is now acting like he's 100 years old. No, I'm not. I'm not 100, and I'm not 25. And then one last email that I got here is from Rob with two Bs. He says he's been kind of quiet. He also enjoyed the previous the episode, the end of the year shows, and he says... he wanted to talk about GamePolitics.com having two stories featuring financial analyst Michael Pachter. Now, Michael Pachter, he is the managing director of research for Wedbush Morgan Securities and basically is paid to make up things. The first article has him declaring that there will be no Bully 2. The next article after that declares success for Left Behind Eternal Forces, which is the Christian-themed video game. His reasoning for Bully 2 is extremely faulty and completely ignores Take-Two's business strategy. He analyzes and says that the research and development costs for Bully would have to be repeated for Bully 2, which is bunk. Take-Two reuses their software engine, tools, and settings like crazy, and they license them to developers too. Now, portion of what this guy said was that he said basically in October, the regular edition of Bully sold 125,000 units, and the collector's edition sold another 30,000 units. So, and then in November it only sold 105,000 units, which is less. So it did not sell particularly well during the holiday. So, you know, he says that it was pretty much a kind of a flop. He says that the estimates total 800,000 units at an average wholesale price of around $30, so it will likely generate around $24 million in revenues. Since the game took 3 years to develop, it likely cost close to $15 million in R&D, and his guess is that the company did no better than to break even. He would not expect a sequel. So that's what he said about that. Rob with 2Bs continues, he can't comment on whether Left Behind will do well. All you can say is getting a lot of Take-Two-like publicity. No such thing as bad press. In this case, yes, I think Left Behind will do better based on the media coverage than it would without. Goodness, it sold lots of bully. Now, this analyst says that sales figures for Left Behind are kind of hard to get because the developers relied on distribution through like Christian bookstores, which don't report like back to the NPD group, which tracks game sales. He ventures to guess that the game sold quite well, like at least 200,000 units, and that will continue to sell well, particularly overseas. He doesn't think that the controversy had any impact on consumers who frequent Christian bookstores, and he thinks that there will be a sequel if the developers broke even or generated a profit, since the book series is so deep. And so Robbie ends by saying, overall, I sense an agenda here. It seems to be a personal spiritual agenda, but then it also seems like an attempt to influence the market. What do you think? Okay, so here's what I think. Analysts are paid to make statements. Like, the PS3 will win this gen. And, yeah. So, I don't take what analysts say very seriously because they're really just talking out of their butts and making numbers. But I will say this. I haven't touched Left Behind all that much here. Left Behind Eternal Forces is basically, it's based on the best-selling Christian book series where, the rapture happens, and so all the good Christians go up to heaven, and all that's left are the heathens to battle the Antichrist. That's basically what it's about. And Left Behind Eternal Forces is a real-time strategy game of converted Christians after the rapture, who then need to kill or, you know, stop the Antichrist, and there is a fair amount of killing those who do not believe in God in it. Although that's up for debate, according to the developers and stuff, and a lot of gamers have been rallying against Left Behind, and I haven't played the demo of Left Behind. There is a demo available, but my thing is here is, you know, if we're going to sit here and defend Bully and Grand Theft Auto, then we really should be defending Left Behind as well. And so it's kind of interesting to see that, you know, if this game was not called a Christian-themed game, we'd have no problem with it. But the fact that it was a Christian-themed game, that's when we're all getting up in arms over it. And, I mean, maybe it's because it's a double standard. I don't know. So I'm going to open up the phone lines for a little bit and see if anybody has anything to say about it. Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156 is our toll-free number. If you want to talk about that or any of the other topics that we've talked about tonight. 2K Sports Fan says, Left Behind is for what? PC, PS3, or 360? It is for the PC. It's a PC real-time strategy game. We do have a caller. Bobby Black will show you're on the air. Who is this?
Hey, man. It's Jared J.
Hey, Jared. What's up?
Hey, listen. I got a couple things I want to say. First off, I want your opinion on, when I was 4 or 5, like, Sonic the Hedgehog was my hero, okay?
Okay.
He was the man, and he's no longer the man. It's just like, I don't know what they're thinking and what they're doing with this series, because I played the demo of that new one, and it is just horrific.
My worst game of the year.
Yeah, I know, and you're totally right. I completely agree with you. It's like, I don't understand why, like, a smart publisher like Sega, like, and they take their storied franchise. This is their Mario.
Right.
And they do this to it. There had to have been somebody that knew how bad this game was. So, like, is there any hope for this guy? And what would you do, like, if you had this license? Like, it just makes me angry, honestly.
If I had this, the franchise, I would try to take it back to 2D. And that doesn't mean getting rid of 3D graphics or 3D models or even 3D elements, but I would make it more like a fast-paced side-scroller. Because I think that is when the Sonic franchise went wrong, was when they went to 3D. And I liked Sonic Adventure, and you know, but not as much as the original Sonic.
That was 1999.
Yeah, that was the Dreamcast. I mean that was my favorite game of the Dreamcast.
7-8 years ago. Okay, yeah. That was somewhat passable, but Sonic the Hedgehog now has all those same problems that were passable in 1999.
Right.
And now they're just like, ugh.
Because people are still buying it. And I think that's what they're seeing is they're like, you know, people are buying it. It's Sonic. And unfortunately, there are people that are buying it. It is Sonic. And that's why they're not really doing it. I mean, they may say, yeah, this sucks, but people are going to buy it, and we spent all this money on it, so we should release it and try to get our money back.
Well, I guess that's just the way the industry works.
Yeah. And, I mean, Sega is not really that well known for, you know, making smart decisions. I mean, they did kind of mess up the Dreamcast launch, and that's why
Saturn Day?
Yeah. Yeah, so they're not that smart in terms of what to do with their franchises.
It just makes me angry as, like, this kid who grew up with Sonic, and then just, like, and just to see that, it's kind of like, oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah. I mean, everybody goes through cycles like that. I mean, you know, Sub-Z is sitting here in chat saying that I should say the same about Mario because that's how he feels about it. And, I mean, yeah, I mean, even Mario's, you know, had some down years, and I think Mario was actually superior both in the 2D days and in the early days of 3D, like Super Mario 64. You know, and I'm not that impressed with Galaxy yet.
Hopefully it's better than Sunshine.
Yeah.
Okay, and one more quick thing is, it's just like, where do these business analysts, I don't know what it's been over the last 6 months, but just like business analysts have just got like a hard-on for the game industry, right?
Yeah.
And where are they coming from? Why are they thinking they're making money off of this? And why are we giving them press? Because they clearly don't know what they're talking about. They're not in the industry.
Two words. Well, one word and one number.
Okay.
PlayStation 3. That's where they came from.
I still like mine.
Well, I mean, it's just basically all the media hype around the PlayStation 3 and about Sony and stuff. I mean, that's why, you know, even, you know, not even looking at the analysts, but the press, they were all over the PlayStation 3 launch. PlayStation 3 was big mainstream news. The weather lady was out at the PS3 launch lines.
No. Okay, question for you, Black World. Were they there for the PS3 launch, or were they there to report about the shootings afterwards that they knew were going to ensue and the crazy extent that people were going to go through?
I don't think they knew about the shootings beforehand. Because, I mean, one of the reporters actually got shot in one of the drive-bys. I mean,
I didn't hear that, really?
Yeah, the one in Kentucky, they actually grazed the newspaper reporter that was there covering the line.
Ow.
So that's why I say no, not really. They were there to cover the craziness of the PS3 launch. However, none of them showed up for the Wii launch two nights later.
Well, the Wii was like an afterthought to them, and now you'll see a lot more stories on CNN about, hey, check out this crazy new Wii thing. The controller is a remote.
And people are throwing them into the walls and hitting people with each other, you know.
I know. One thing about that, I got my Wii replacement straps, right?
Yeah.
And just to, like, goof around, I took the old strap.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what these people were doing to break these things.
Yeah.
Because these things are built.
Apparently, from what I heard somewhere else, and I can't remember where, they can take, the old straps can take about 50 pounds worth of pressure.
I saw that too. I think it was like 60, actually.
Yes, 50 or 60 pounds. So you've got to work hard to break that strap. But Nintendo's going to get sued over
that. Roger Clemens throwing this thing couldn't break that thing. All right, well, that's all I got.
Okay.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for calling, man.
Yep.
Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. I'll take one more call. I do know that I'm going a little bit over my time, and I apologize for that. Maybe in editing I'll be able to break it down to under an hour, but no guarantees. If anybody else wants to call in, give me a call. True says he still hasn't gotten his wrist strap replacements. I hadn't gotten mine either, but then again, I also ordered mine late because I'm lazy. But they've shipped. I just haven't gotten them yet. Okay, so I do have one more call, and so I'm going to pick up this call real quick. Bobby Black will show you're on the air. Who is this?
This is Gia.
Hey, what's up?
Nothing much. I was just wondering how your XNA stuff is going.
I talked about it a little bit at the beginning of the show. I haven't been able to touch it much recently, but I am going to be talking a little bit more about it later on. Once I can play a little more about it. Have you been playing with it?
Yeah, I've been playing with the Torque X. It's like the XNA component that works with the Torque stuff.
Right.
I've been using Torque for about 2, maybe 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's been a while. And it's really cool because I can take the same exact Torque Game Builder stuff from before and then actually, like, implement it with the XNA stuff. So I've been doing some pretty cool stuff in, like, a lot less time because I can use Torque Game Builder stuff.
Yeah, and Torque is going to help a lot because a lot of people are thinking that XNA itself is going to be like RPG Maker, you know, drag and drop, put stuff in. And XNA itself is not... But I believe that there are portions of, like, the Torque Game Builder engine where you can drag and drop, like, a side-scroller. Am I right?
Exactly, exactly. Like, mm-hmm. You can actually bring in your sprites, like, right off.
Right.
Like, you can just say, okay, here's my animation. Just drag and drop it right onto the scene. You can actually set up classes and everything right there in the Game Builder.
Yeah.
So I think, like, when that becomes more popular, you'll see, like, a lot more people doing stuff like that with it.
Yeah, because, I mean, Torque is a great little engine and stuff, so I'm excited to see what people will do with that. You know, right now I'm sticking with just straight XNA and writing my own engine because sometimes that's fun. So what have you been actually making?
Well, I'm working on a couple puzzle games, actually.
Okay.
I'm still waiting on them to add the 3D component to the Torque stuff because it's not available yet. I don't know why. So I've been working on some 2D puzzles. Like one of them is kind of like a cross between. Oh, jeez, I can't really describe it, but it's kind of like Magic Cup, but not really. Like
okay.
There's more stuff to it.
Right.
Like there's like it's like kind of like where the balls are coming down or whatever, but then there's like a you got a match component to it. I really can't describe it on the air. I'd have to like show you a map or something.
Yeah.
Have you seen any other XNA games by other people yet? Because, I mean, there's really nothing, like, not even on the forums anything yet.
Well, the problem right now is with XNA is, like, especially because the big component of XNA is that it's supposed to be for, the 360, is to do 360 development. And the problem is, to get a game on your 360, you need to have all of their source code, all of their art assets, and you have to bring it into your copy of XNA Game Studio Express, compile it on your PC, and deploy it to your 360. So people
right.
aren't passing around 360 games just yet because I don't want to give away all my source code or my assets.
Good point, yeah.
You know, but, you know, on the PC, people, you can distribute the executable just fine, no problem, you know, and you can do whatever you want with the PC side. And so people, I think, are still playing around with it, waiting for the 360 component to come up.
I got you. Yeah, I'd really like to see other people's stuff, what they're doing, even if it's just screenshots or explanations or anything. Really,
I have seen.
It'd be nice to get some interactive going on.
I have seen some stuff like some of the people that I was on XBL Radio with on their XNA roundtable, which is coming out this Tuesday. They actually did a 3D RC plane demo, which I believe is up at xnaresources.com. You'll have to listen to XBL Radio and find out where that is. But they do have an RC plane demo that is full source code. You can download it, put it on your PC, put it on your 360 or whatever. Not really a game. It's more of a tech demo, but it's using the 3D elements and stuff and the controller and the rumble and all that stuff.
Very cool. Because I was just at MPCon, and out of 185 gamers, there was not a single other person using it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be like a rarity at most now.
Yeah.
Well, at least right now. Mm-hmm. So, all right, cool, Bobby. Good
okay.
show. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Bye.
Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. I'm just going to see if one more person wants to call in before I sign off, because we're all waiting for the, the Microsoft keynote. Bobby Blackwolf Show, you're on the air. Who is this?
Hey, Bobby Blackwolf, it's Pen15.
Hey, man, what's on your mind?
I'd like to talk about the whole Super Columbine Massacre.
Okay.
I'm a writer, and often when, you know, I picture my ideas, it's usually in game form because I'm also a gamer.
Right.
And a lot of times it's kind of frustrating when I write something and I'm like, wow, it's such a simple thing, but you just never see it in a game because people don't consider gaming to be something that grown-ups do.
Right. Yeah, the word game has a connotation that really, you know, a lot of people think for kids or for kids at heart. You know, and I mean, I wish it was able to be looked at as a serious medium like films are these days.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't understand why so many people have this double standard because, I mean, yes, you are taking part in something, but, I mean, people get hurt playing football all the time, and your kid is allowed to idolize a big, giant guy who takes steroids for a living, and that's okay somehow.
And beats other people up.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can also put it out, you know, even like wrestling. You know, they let lots of kids watch professional wrestling, which is basically two dudes wearing next to nothing, beating the crap out of each other, and that's okay. But, you know, now you've got games that may, you know, do the same thing, and you know, they're too violent.
Like the thing that I said also about you not wanting to go to E3, well, it was more about I wish you could go to E3, because it's like I could get IGN's views on things, you know, but I won't take it as serious as just a regular person.
Right. I mean, and well, I mean, I think AGI will at least be able to get in, but, you know, I may not actually be able to get in. I don't know. But, I mean, it's really, it depends, because it's all, even if I could, quote-unquote, get into E3, it's all about setting up appointments to meet with the publishers. That's kind of the way they're structuring it now. It's a bunch of meeting rooms and hotel suites and stuff where they invite you in, you come in at a specific time and look at a game. And so they're going to be very selective on who they're going to let in anyway, even if you are in E3. So I'm willing to see how the coverage is and what actually transpires in July, because I've never seen anything like this yet in the game industry. So, you know, I'm going to hold out before I condemn the new E3. You know, I'm going to hold out and see what they do first. But they really did need to take away the glam and the glitz from the gamers that wanted to get in if they wanted to survive.
Well, I still think that they should have gone the TGS route. I think that would have fit best.
We'll see. I mean, maybe E4All eventually will turn into the TGS, but right now that's not it.
Well, at $100, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Well, TGS wasn't free either, but I don't think it was $100 to get in. TGS was free if you cosplayed. I think that was the gimmick. You had to show up in costume, and then you got in free. Anything
Are
else
you
on
serious?
Your mind?
No, that was about it.
Okay. Thanks much for calling in.
All right, great show.
And that's it. That is all that I'm going to inflict on you guys tonight. I do know I went a little long. Sorry. I'll make it up to you. I'll have like a 30-minute show next week. How about that? So All Games Interactive with Scott Rubin and Lawrence Young is live each and every weeknight from the Arena Interactive Lounge in West Los Angeles at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, right here on All Games Radio at allgames.com. We will be back again next Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, here on All Games Radio. So catch us live and interact with the show directly. Feel free to leave a voicemail with us on any topic or leave a bumper for use on our show on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show. Or you can email your thoughts and opinions to me at blackwolf@allgames.com, and you can join our official forums at allgames.com to take part in our community. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters. DC Nate, GK128, Hendrix, Hermdog, Nekoban, Burr, Fifth Dream, Ichiban, Oshi, Rare, Refi, Seymour Booty, Stone Raider, The Matrix, THK, Bren, True, Alt, Amazed, Setsuma, Bacon Bits, Black Boy, Bloodshot on his Wii, B Wallach ME, Chrisville 1724, Cedabria, Crispy, Dragon Slayer, Engduff 59, Fang, Firemac, Glitch 720, Interlogic, Just Insane, Kazan, Lampert 2E, Magnum 50 Caliber, Maximilian, Mecha, Mike W, Mo, NXS, Joe Kill, Pen 15, Raven's Dolphin, Shadows Liar, Soul Brother Rules, Spalding, Sub-Z, TDB30, Tedekin, The Rob D, Twinson, Tigerclaw, Uberfragger, VX Jason XV, Will Khan, and Zappy. So once again, hope you guys had a new year. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight, and we will see you next week.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed on tonight's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of All Games Productions. This file may be freely distributed provided the original content is unedited and proper attribution is retained. For more information about All Games programming, go to www.allgames.com.